everyone with an interest in NASH, or more broadly, fatty liver disease, surfs up. Season 2, episode 53 of Surfing the NASH Tsunami starts now.
This week on Surfing the NASH Tsunami.
It's impressive, the quantity and quality of research that's being presented at AASLD. We are seeing incremental movement forward in the science of liver disease.
That post-grad course in the morning is like a movie set, like Ocean's 11. This is Ocean's 10. If you want to know anything about, you've got a stellar lineup there.
I was really delighted to see us moving in a direction where we have surrogate endpoints to histology that are going to be predictors of liver-related endpoints, plus the leading cause of morbidity and mortality in our patients being cardiovascular-related endpoints.
I found it particularly interesting that they looked at the CVD risk and they observed in the pre-cirrhotic state there was an increase with the cardiovascular disease risk, but once the patient hits cirrhosis, then it's a whole different story. And I think it's something we know, and it's nice that they pick it up with these NITs here.
At the time of the aldafermin withdrawal, I remember conversations about the idea that nobody was sure of the degree to which they viewed a clinical failure versus a commercial failure. I'm hoping that this presentation is going to shed a lot of light on that issue. Because if it was a commercial failure, then that speaks to the robustness and maturity of the drugs that we're developing. If it turns out that clinically it looks like it wasn't going to make it, that would be a really troubling perspective.
I think this liver meeting is going to be one of the better ones or best ones because we're really at a crossroads on the verge of making some breakthroughs in precision medicine.
Thousands of stakeholders from across the global hepatology community will convene virtually for the Digital Liver Meeting 2021, a four-day event with well over 100 sessions on a broad range of liver-related topics. Join hepatology researchers and key opinion leaders, Professors Jörn Schottenberg and Manal Abdelmalek, and Dr. Kenneth Kuzi, liver wellness advocate Louise Campbell, and pricing and forecasting guru Roger Green as they discuss key topics and events in the Liver Meeting program, this week on Surfing the NASH Tsunami.
I want to talk for a second about adolescent fantasies. When I was a teenager, the thing I always wanted to be, since I couldn't be a pro athlete, was either to be a pro sports announcer or a disc jockey, and I got talked completely out of that. I only say that because in the past, every one of the previous episodes that we've broadcast has been from my home or my office or something I rigged up to feel loosely like it was a recording studio or radio station. But today, I'm actually at the studios of station WBFY in Belfast, Maine. This is a local community station, low frequency, act of love by people who wanted Belfastians, whatever you call people in Belfast, to have access to local Belfast things. This is where my daughter lives. And they were good enough to let me use the station. WBFY stands for We Broadcast For You. I can't believe they were able to get those call letters just a few years ago, but they were. And they run a steady program of interesting kinds of music for people in the local area. This town, Belfast, Maine, is one of the significant vacation towns on the Maine coast. It's situated about half the way between Camden and Bar Harbor, if any of that means anything for you, or Portland and the Canadian border, if that means anything for you. And with all that Maine history behind us, why don't we just get started? Today is going to be our day to preview the AASLD 2021 conference, which starts week of Friday, and we will be covering the following weekend. First, let me have everybody introduce themselves and say hi. On my screen, it goes Jörn, Manal, Ken, Louise. So, Jörn, why don't you say hi?
Hi, Roger. Good evening.
Manal?
Hi, everyone. It's Manal Abdelmalek here at Duke University.
Ken?
This is Ken Kuzi at the University of Florida. I'm an endocrinologist, so always giving a little bit of a hormonal angle to NASH.
We need harmony, Ken. That's great.
And then on the drums, Louise Campbell.
Welcome, and good evening.
I am your disc jockey, Roger Green, actually, with the recording studio and all that stuff behind me. At any rate, our coverage for AASLD is starting to take shape. We will be covering Sunday and Monday, which are the days that have most of the sessions that will present new news about NAFLD, going up to record an hour after the end of each evening, which will be 6:30 Eastern time, and having something out to you folks by the following morning Eastern time. And then Tuesday afternoon, which is the day after the conference wraps up, we will do what would normally be our Monday mid-afternoon wrap-up episode, which we may get out Wednesday, we may get out Thursday. And there may be one other session Saturday night, but we're not going to talk about that right now. We'll come back to it next week if appropriate. So far, we have titles for many of the sessions. Interestingly enough, for the late breakers, right now there's exactly one title for each of the 2 days of late breakers, so we can't tell you a lot about that yet at all. And we only have titles and everything else is in embargoed. But as we did with Easel in the spring, our goal is to have each of our panelists take a look at a couple of titles that they think might turn out to be interesting papers and talk about why. I'm hoping all these good folks will be joining us on at least one of the episodes. No one's obligated to talk on the episode about the title that you give today, but just to give folks a flavor of what the meeting is going to be. And with that, let's just do our icebreakers and then we'll get started. Good news, personal or professional. Take your pick. I'll go first. I'm in Belfast, Maine, visiting my younger daughter, and I had hoped to be able to go spend my birthday with my younger daughter because it's something we hadn't done since she left the Philadelphia metropolitan area in 2010, I guess. But that was last year, 2020, and the pandemic made it impossible. And this summer, logistics made it impossible. So this is the first time I've seen Becca in 2 years. She looks great, and she's doing fantastic. And Belfast is a great town for at least another 3 weeks before the miserable cold and snow set in. So I'm happy to be here and happy to be here with her. That's me.
I'm going next. Last week was my birthday, so I'm feeling younger than ever. Then on Saturday was a beautiful day here in northern Florida, so I went to play golf with my son, who's studying here also at the University of Florida, and we had a great time. I have to say that I'm a much talented golfer than anything else, so we only lost about 4 or 5 balls in the swamps of northern Florida, but I think overall we did okay, so hopefully we'll get a chance to play a little bit more often and maybe even with one of you guys.
I'll jump in next then. After I did the podcast last week, I did have a sterling round of golf around Quinta de Lobo, 18 holes, and my irons were great, but my good of the week is we got took delivery of our first mobile clinic van, all set up with clinic tables. So we really can be all over the United Kingdom now, from Orkney to Jersey, the Isle of Man through Ireland. So that was quite exciting. And the first 4 digits are LF21. So liver function 21 is going to hit the road soon.
So was I your first LinkedIn like on your post on that? You posted about how pretty the scenery was from where you were setting up your mobile.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to reduce my carbon footprint because, of course, we're trying to be more sustainable for liver disease and get as many people there. But I was on my way past Buckingham Palace to a remote clinic that I was doing that I've done regularly for a while. But it was such a beautiful day in London this morning as you wander the streets. So I was getting my steps up and keeping my carbon footprint down. Liver disease and fibre scanning was truly sustainable.
Superb.
I can go next. Well, this week was special to me because I was setting up a virtual celebration with my first mentor, who is near and dear to my heart because he's also receiving one of the ASLD Distinguished Awards, Keith Linder, who's receiving the Clinical Educator Mentor Award. He was my very first mentor ever in the field of GI and hepatology and introduced me to my very first case of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease progressing to cirrhosis. So I had the pleasures of setting up a virtual celebration with him and all his mentees in the field. And he's in a lineup of some really stellar other awardees at ASLD. And I look forward to celebrating them all, and particularly Dr. Linder.
Including at least 2 past panelists of ours, right? Scott is being recognized and Donna Cryer is being recognized.
Yes, we have the first ASLD Distinguished Advocacy Service Award going to Donna Cryer this year. So that's really great to see not only patient advocacy, but the history of fatty liver disease come full circle and touch us all.
We claim Donna Cryer now as our own, I think, on that
that's
award.
That's right.
No. Great congratulations to Elwood.
But let's just not do We Made Her What She Is. She did that one entirely before she got here. But yes, we will claim her as our own. Joran, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just finish this up quickly. There's a public holiday here in Germany, so I had the pleasure to stay home with kids today, and I'm looking forward to the week. Heading into November is always very exciting because ASLD is around the corner. Actually, the New York Marathon is around the corner, which is a very emotional event for myself. I ran that 3 times, so I'm always excited to see that evolve. Of course, looking forward to ASLD.
So this is a fantastic set of, and diverse, frankly, set of good news openings. I only have one thought for our colleague, Dr. Cousy, which is usually when someone says that they're a better golfer than anyone else and they only lost 4 or 5, I'm waiting for the next phrase to be $100. So if all you lost was golf balls, I think you did quite well.
I'll take him rounds around the golf course, not joining you on the green. I think that'd be safer for everyone.
I just made it down to 12 of handicap. That was my best, but I haven't practiced that much lately.
Whoa, that's impressive.
That is impressive. That is impressive. That's about 24 ahead of me. So with that, what I'd like us to do is just take a look at the event. Okay, it starts on Friday. It runs through Monday. Saturday is a day-long postgraduate course on NAFLD and NASH with, I want to say I didn't count it, but maybe 20 different presentations or so, 24, big number. Pretty much covering everything you'd ever want to ask about NAFLD and NASH with a fantastic cast of worldwide leaders giving talks. And then there are some sessions on different elements on Sunday and Monday. I'm not looking at my calendar right now. I'm looking at my colleagues. And those will have probably six talks each. The presidential plenary session on Sunday, if I recall, has four, five, or six, depending on how you want to count it, talks that in some way, shape, or form touch on Nash. The only late breaker that's posted for Sunday is a Nash late breaker. And then there are a couple of sessions as well on Monday. Because Sunday and Monday appear heavily tilted towards Sunday right now, what we've tried to do in the past is only talk about a day on the day of the conference. But if the schedule still tilts toward Nash on Sunday, then we'll be talking about Nash papers from Sunday on Sunday and Monday as well, and then the Monday papers on Monday. I'll come back to whether or how we're going to deal with cover the postgraduate event, either in next Monday's episode or in an email and a postings to everybody later this week. Who would like to start by picking a section or title that you have particular reasons that might be worth our audience hearing about? Manal, go ahead.
Certainly you're right, Roger, that this postgraduate course is heavy on NAFLD and Nash, and it's going to be a very whirlwind and an exceptional postgraduate course. I know Mary Ranella and Lori DeLev put a lot of effort in putting that together, and a great lineup of speakers. So I was perusing the program, though. One lecture really kind of came to light for me, and it actually didn't even have NAFLD and Nash in the title, but I think it has amazing pertinence to the field of NAFLD and Nash. And it's a talk that's going to be given by Dr. Neil Henderson, which is the Hans Popper Basic Science State-of-the-Art Lecture. He's going to be talking about single-cell genomics as an approach for transforming our understanding of disease pathogenesis and allowing a very powerful and unbiased exploration of cell states and the understanding of novel approaches to tissue biology and disease mechanisms. So you can clearly see how this would have pertinence, particularly for complex disease biology such as NAFLD and NASH. And if we can harness single-cell genomic approaches to increase our understanding of cellular and molecular mechanisms that drive the necroinflammatory response, the integration of and crosstalk of these different pathways, and particularly the drivers of cell injury and repair and fibrogenesis, that might really help us unlock the right approach to therapeutics. So I thought this lecture, while it didn't even have NAFLD and NASH in the title, had huge bearing on applying single-cell technologies and genomic approaches in the future to better understanding our disease mechanisms and targeting therapeutics. Because we have to kind of admit it, we're kind of been shooting in the dark, hoping that one drug that fits one target and one pathway, we would get lucky with having, you know, a be-all, end-all therapeutic approach. But the reality is we haven't done well as a field on any therapeutic front, and we've on average 30-40% respond to any one target. And leveraging single-cell genomics to understand the integration of these pathways and the drivers of disease might help us sort through our therapeutic landscape, at least to think about what pathways are the prominent drivers or the integrated pathways that drive fibrogenesis, so we can put the right drugs together for the right individuals.
That links well with another symposium on Monday on the other end of emerging trends that also is touching on genetics from a testing perspective. Despite a number of SNPs that predict, like the most famous one, PNLPA3, predict having more steatosis and, more importantly, worse outcomes, steatohepatitis and even advanced fibrosis, they've not made it to mainstream yet because sometimes they've been difficult to tailor to a given patient. So hopefully that approach that Manal says is going to be interesting. I like this emerging trends because it's going to touch on some things that people can do now. Typically when I talk, you know, NASH is important. We need to screen. I get this kind of from non-hepatologists, from my endocrine peers or primary care. Well, there's no FDA-approved drug, you know, get people to lose weight. I see a lot of inertia, if you want to put it in a neutral term. But I think that awareness that there are active treatments and surgical approaches in metabolic surgery and some treatments you can do today, I mean, I think that will shake up a little bit that inertia.
One comment I would like to make apropos of all that is that in the last 4 weeks, we've had two sessions that wound up focusing in the general neighborhood that you're talking about, Manal, one with Lars Johansson and another with Scott Friedman. And those have been exceptionally well listened to. I'm not going to get to what's happened to listenership of the podcast until we get to the business section. But this past month, this I will get to, has been 40% higher in terms of downloaders than anything in the past. And those two episodes had the interest, and one that Ken did, well, the one that Ken did was a little different. Those two had the interesting effect of bringing in people that knew about the podcast, but hadn't been around for a while. So they came in, and what they did was they downloaded those episodes and also some of the older things they thought were relevant. So I think there's a real thirst among people to understand that better for exactly the reason you gave, Manal, which is that maybe this is a path for us to get to some of the places we're having a hard time getting to. And so we have some data on that from listenership.
Yeah, you know, Roger and Manal, I fully agree. I think this is where the basic science can evolve the field and help us to identify the right target populations, increasing those zero response rates we're seeing in the 20s or 30s to really move the needle on efficacy and pick the patients that are right for the drug. So I'm very excited on those developments. And I think we'll see new therapeutics emerge from those concepts, understanding which cells are activated in what context and potentially how to target them. So I'm right with you guys there.
You know, another program on Friday, in addition to the Hans Popper lecture, that I think has great pertinence to us, even though it certainly didn't have NAFLD/NASH in the title, is the Liver Cell Biology SIG is going to be talking about the gut-liver axis and the trigger of the gut microbiota as a risk factor for chronic liver disease progression. They're going to dive into some deeper insights on this reciprocal interaction between the gut microbiota and chronic liver injury and issues related to the intestinal barrier. I'm sure complementary discussions are going to unfold about bile acid synthesis and glucose and lipid metabolism pertaining on gut microbiota. And I think it has a lot of pertinence to NAFLD/NASH, because certainly we know that the gut microbiota is of importance, not only to obesity, but has been associated even with alterations in metabolic risk and has also been identified in the pathobiology of NAFLD/NASH. Hearing this lecture is going to be one that I will earmark for my Friday.
Manal, I think that's a fantastic contribution and makes an important point.
I was going to say, I think that's being presented. It's a huge panel of people, but a lot of leading experts in the microbiota and liver injury field. Grace Gao, Zai Dong-Gi, Dr. Lee. It's a great lineup of speakers.
Roger, let me follow up and dig in a little deeper into the program. I actually looked at the parallel sessions. There is some on NAFLD. Of course, the one on diagnostics and biomarkers was very interesting to me. That's Sunday, November 14th. It's between 10 and 11:30. And there's actually 6 talks being given. It starts out with some data from the Litmus Registry, which I'm involved in. I am a co-author on the first paper, which details individual patient data meta-analysis on the performance of certain non-invasive tests for screening at-risk NASH, which we normally define as F2 and higher. There's a number of follow-up presentations looking at either liver stiffness, MRE, and outcome, which, you know, have been one of the key knowledge gaps that we've identified to actually link the diagnostic test to the outcome. This is an abstract given by Haral Ajmera from UCSD. They included over 265 patients looking at decompensation and actually call out MRE cutoffs, as we've discussed on the podcast here, too, associated with higher odd risks of cumulative outcomes. So I think that's very interesting. And actually, a new emerging biomarker, which is a blood-based biomarker that could be of interest to us, thrombospondin 2. This is an interesting molecule, and we've seen that in the Litmus cohort, too, but this work is actually going to be presented by a Japanese colleague, Dr. Kozumi, and they did an unsupervised clustering approach in a well-performed histological-based cohort and discover TSP2 as a diagnostic marker for NASH with advanced fibrosis. So I think a lot of excitement in that parallel session 10 around novel biomarkers and actually linking them to outcome, which is so urgently needed if we discuss leaving liver histology as an endpoint.
Personally, I like that session a lot, in part because of that, in part because I think it's going to bring more real a couple of the things that we've been talking about on this podcast, where, you know, there's a liver stiffness paper, there's a machine model learning paper, and then, as you point out, a couple of really novel things. So I had that marked on my calendar, something not to miss any of. And since I don't care about Tottenham football very much right now, even if they're playing, then it's not going to get in the way of my watching. Louise was fortunately on mute, so she could laugh as loud as she wanted to.
I was laughing because I didn't think you were going to bring that up, and I wasn't going to. Anyway, I thought that was very brave of you. On the Friday, I was interested in, obviously, the presentation of awards, just to be there and watch Donna get hers and some of the other distinguished guests, which I thought was great. But the one I'm looking forward to in the evening is the public health and healthcare delivery, SIG, and it's 5:30 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. And it's when we talk about people get less enthused about treating NAFLD because there's no drug approved. Actually, this one takes us right back to the behavioural approach. If we can really look at the way we look at the behavioural approach and the mechanisms that we can use with patients, also other healthcare practitioners, then bringing it back and targeting our strengths, not ignoring them or leaving them as weaknesses. I don't think we have to always look for medication. It does float a lot of people's boats, but we've got to use the strengths that we've got now. So I'm interested in that session to see how they come around it and how they look at it and what they're proposing. So that was the one that particularly interested me, apart from some of the other sessions that have been discussed already for Friday.
All right. Anybody else have anything on Friday that they thought was particularly interesting? Historically, we focused our coverage on papers, but there were a whole bunch of sessions on Friday that I thought were interesting. Clinical trial design and challenges in NAFLD is one.
There's also the abstract tour on COVID-19. And of course, we know an awful lot more now with the data that's coming out. So now I'm interested to see stronger stuff in that. So that was another one. And I think it's parallel to the one that you've just mentioned, which is the clinical trial design and challenges in NAFLD. I've earmarked both of those.
They're all at about the same time, unfortunately. This is 4:30 to 5:15, so it's not so different from the other one that you were mentioning. Anybody else have anything on Friday they find particularly interesting?
You know, you could consider the notion to move into the NASH cirrhosis field interesting and then look at that. They talk about portal hypertension there, clinical and experimental sick on that. I think there will be some interesting aspects that are covered there, you know, in relation to how does HVPG correlate with outcomes with non-invasive tests we can look at. And I think that that's a good one.
And then the liver fibrosis SIG is focusing on NASH fibrosis and comes, I think, right before that on the calendar of the day. So if you wanted to spend 2.5 hours taking a deep dive into NASH fibrosis, certainly have the opportunity to do that. So for those of us who are uninitiated, and our audience is uninitiated, other than the idea that goes, there are going to be a bunch of fantastic papers at the postgraduate course on Saturday, is there anything else our audience should know about it before deciding whether to spend their Saturday attending?
I guess if you're based in Europe, you've got to be really excited to stay up that long. That's my thinking about this.
That's why you can now usually get your computer to auto-record if you give it a timestamp to work towards. But yeah.
God, I haven't worked that way out yet, but now I might have a lesson.
Well, I guess these days you have to pick between being jet-lagged at the conference or staying late at night up and watching from home. But I guess I prefer the jet lag and the personal touch.
I was going to say, it's the in-person that gives you the energy to cope with the jet lag, right?
I guess the only other thing I could mention on Friday, they are going to have a Meet the Expert session on Friday afternoon from 4:30 to 5:30 on clinical trial design and challenges in NAFLD. And so if anybody, particularly your audience out there, has a keen interest on trial design and the challenges that we've been met with, just having a small Zoom session, small group discussions really makes for a good way to spend an hour of your time. I'm sure it'll be very engaging. Lots of well-known experts in the field of liver disease and certainly clinical investigators and researchers and likely a representation of industry as well there talking about trial design and challenges and endpoints.
Do you know who's leading that session, Manal?
It did not specify in the program, so I don't have a lead, as I do have a consensus on experts. That's what it said. Meet the experts. Which ones they are, I don't know.
But they will be experts. We know that, huh?
Yeah. There will be experts.
That one kind of intrigues me. I might go to that just to learn, although there's enough to learn enough places on Friday. So, okay, let's skip past Saturday in the interest of you aren't getting some sleep at some point on that day. And noting that a full day session in a virtual meeting is a really interesting concept. It'll be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Just before you skip past Saturday, there are a couple of really good sessions on Saturday. There's the Women's Health session that's 8:00 European time. So the Women's Health in Liver Disease, and as we know, fatty liver post-menopause. So I'm really interested to see whether they're going to cover any of that. That's a particular session that I'm keen on. And there's a couple of parallel sessions in the morning, the health service and public health again. How are we configuring services? What are we proposing? So Saturday's not a total miss day. There's a lot of great stuff on Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I would have to say, Roger, that with the postgraduate course, they're covering from A to Z in NASH. We have Manal giving a great talk. Anything you wanted to know about the treatment of fatty liver and you never dared to ask or something like that, right? Everybody's anticipating a great talk by Manal, as usual. Maybe she can tell us what she's going to be talking about. Arun Sanyal is talking about disease drivers of progression. Quentin Anstey from Newcastle about the good, the bad, and the ugly of risk stratification. And there's been a lot with the consortiums that he's leading. Rohit Loomba is going to be talking again about imaging and diagnosis. Are bugs driving the fate of NAFLD? Okay, that's a microbiome talk. I'm going to have to talk about some hormones too. I mean, what can I say? But again, alcohol, how much is too much? So I think that the Saturday program is going to keep people awake and well. And then Stefano Romeo is talking about genetics. So if you wanted to know anything about NASH, Saturday would be a good summary of the latest and the greatest.
I got the privilege of talking about what can we do with available therapies. Being that there's nothing FDA approved yet, I had to milk that one, but there are options. So I get the pleasure of talking about that.
So Manal, I should tell you, first of all, that response to the episode where you gave the impromptu half-hour talk on that was really, really well received. I had to get a COVID test before I came up here. And the nurse who gave me the COVID-19 test was having that conversation with her mother the day before. Her mother had fatty liver disease and was complaining there were no drugs for it. And she said, well, you know, there's metformin. It's not indicated, but people use it. And I said, I know you don't listen to my podcast, but you might want to.
I was just going to say that post-grad course in the morning is like a movie set, like Ocean's 11. This is Ocean's 10. If you want to know anything about, you've got a stellar lineup there. Manal is one of the Ocean's 10 or the Nash 10 or whatever. That's just nowhere else to be on that morning.
So are they giving you guys t-shirts to say Ocean's 10? I think that's a really cool idea, actually.
No t-shirts.
Bummer. So I want to just go back to Saturday for 1 second, because Kent did something really helpful. If you look at the basic program, I'm not aware where there are titles necessarily of everything in the program, but so that's a helpful thing to be able to talk about what are in the individual papers. With that said, let's go on a Sunday. We can come back to Saturday if we have time at the end of the podcast. What caught your eye on Sunday, Manal?
The presidential plenary session on clinical and translational research. And, you know, I think there are a few abstracts of keen interest to the NASH enthusiast. First of all, is the top-line results presentation on the ALPINE 2-3 study results, which is going to be presented by Stephen Harrison. NGM has already publicly disclosed the results of their ALPINE 2-3 NASH program using aldafermin. What's going to be interesting about this talk, and I hope it comes out in the presentation, is the whys of why such promising drugs can get through and then ultimately potentially not reach a primary outcome. And another abstract in this session, which I think is also of keen interest, was the longitudinal association. This is coming out of UCSD. I believe the presenter is Dr. Tamaki. And the longitudinal association between imaging biomarkers, particularly magnetic resonance elastography, and liver and cardiovascular related outcomes. The reason this is of such keen interest is ultimately as we develop these compounds, it's going to have to be towards a clinically meaningful endpoint of feel, function, and survive. And we have no real prognosticative validated surrogates of these endpoints to present to FDA. So I was really, really delighted to see us moving in a direction where we have surrogate endpoints to histology that are going to be predictors of liver-related endpoints, plus the leading cause of morbidity and mortality in our patients being cardiovascular-related endpoints. This session from the presidential session is worth catching.
I agree. And Manal, I looked at the same abstract. I'm just going to extend a little bit on what you said. I found it particularly interesting that they looked at the CVD risk and they observed, you know, in the pre-cirrhotic state, there was an increase with the cardiovascular disease risk. But in the cirrhosis, once the patient hits cirrhosis, then it's a whole different story. And you can see that with those non-invasive markers. And I think it's something we know, and it's nice that they pick it up with these NITs here.
There was some conversation on podcast last week, apropos some of the recent Mayo work, about exactly how far could you take MRE and related markers and demonstrated ratios to create an endpoint. Fundamentally, could you step from a change in stiffness in MRE through to a level of fibrosis change, through from there to a subpart H outcome? Now, interestingly enough, that conversation, I don't think we ever used the phrase cardiovascular events, Louise. I'm trying to remember, but I don't recall that coming up once. So it will be interesting to see how any of those things come together around this presentation.
You know, another abstract in the same session is the genome-wide association study of chronic ALT-based NAFLD in the Million Veterans Program with histologic and radiologic validation. It's going to be presented by Dr. Chang, but this is a huge initiative by the Veterans Program and will certainly inform us more on the genome-wide association with endpoints in this field. So this plenary session has some heavy-hitting science, and I look forward to seeing that.
So, Jorn, at the time of the aldafermin withdrawal, I remember you and I having a couple of conversations about the idea that nobody was sure of the degree to which they viewed a clinical failure versus a commercial failure. My perspective at that time was that it was more likely to have been a commercial failure. Could it have gotten to approval? Probably. Would it have had room to play commercially once it got there? Maybe not. I'm hoping that this presentation is going to shed a lot of light on that issue. If in fact it was a commercial failure, then that speaks to the robustness and maturity of the drugs that we're developing. That someone could take a look at a drug that could get to market and say, no, I'm not going to do that. If in fact it turns out that clinically it looks like it wasn't going to make it, that would be a really troubling perspective.
You know, it reminds us on the barriers on drug development where you got to move fast and want to, you know, want your results early. But most of us agree that the fibrosis readout at 24 weeks is a tough nut to crack with the available drugs we have. And there's been some responses, but it's safer to go beyond 24 weeks. And I think this is something we've seen here. A number of decisions that probably went into that, but I think that was a problem in the trial design from the beginning.
So in that case, it will be interesting to see on Friday at the practical trial design experience whether that 24-week issue comes up and what perspectives people have on it. What else on Sunday caught people's attention?
I suppose just following on from what you were talking about in the plenary session, we've got a whole session on cardiovascular disease and NAFLD. But following on from our session last week with Alina, we've got NAFLD and NASH predicting outcome, which has a run and Marzen as part of the presenters during that session. So there's some good sessions. There's also a session on diagnostics that I'm looking forward to on Sunday. So Sunday's got a lot of nice stuff.
You may have mentioned it. There's the diagnosis and biomarker session on Sunday, but this is going to be an opportunity to delve a little bit deeper into our knowledge of machine learning and artificial intelligence platforms for pathology, how they're performing and being validated, and the limitations. Could such approaches with artificial intelligence overcome the limitations of our current scoring systems in defining progression or regression of hepatic fibrosis? So this is certainly of keen interest in drug development right now.
Manal, one of the things I find myself wondering is we've talked at other points on this podcast about what you can achieve through artificial intelligence, which is you can take a bunch of scores that are really messy and you can make them neater. What you might not be able to achieve is that if the measure that you're looking at doesn't reflect, for example, Alina was talking last week about problem with fibrosis being is that fibrosis is not the only measure of a failing liver or of a liver in danger. So if artificial intelligence enables us to do a better job of getting the fibrosis level right, but doesn't take a look at the broader liver, then is that three pluses, two pluses, one plus? Certainly better than zero, but how many pluses is it?
I think it's at least worth, you know, two to three pluses because we have to get it better. We have to be more precise in our non-invasive approaches to defining that at-risk patient. And I'm not convinced that we're quite there using the existing platforms and how we model and how we integrate and how we define this is going to be paradigm shifting for the field. It's impressive, the quantity and quality of research that's being presented at AASLD, and a huge kudos to investigators, industry, you know, mentees, mentors, everybody out there, because we are seeing incremental movement forward in the science of liver disease, despite a very unprecedented, you know, almost 2 years now. We're getting closer, but anything that can help us in caring for our patients and identifying the at-risk patient and staging them and monitoring them and assessing therapeutic responses non-invasively is going to be essential for us as a field.
So, Roger, along those lines, there's another symposium on Sunday between 1 p.m. and 2:15. It's a joint symposium between AASLD with Dr. Rinella and Dr. Lisker-Melman from Washington University and Dr. Nguyen from Stanford and several leaders in the Latin American arena. It's a symposium between AASLD and the Latin American Society of Liver Disease. And again, knowing that some Hispanics tend to have more of a problem, this is a growing problem and a growing recognition of a problem in Latin America. And they had some guidelines that I know I've helped them, but I by no means played a major role, but I was a little bit of a consultant there. And they came out with very nice guidelines. And again, with this evolving approach of FIB4 followed by elastography, which would make it easy outside of the liver field to at least identify a large portion of those at higher risk. So I thought that these are sometimes symposiums that get overlooked, but I think that for people in the Hispanics with NASH and for the growing consensus worldwide, at a time we're debating nomenclature for NAFLD, MAFLD, and I think this is a good bridging that shouldn't be overlooked.
I don't think we've mentioned the clinical trials of novel therapeutic session on Sunday yet. That's session 21. And just
looking at the substances that are going to be presented there. There's one talk by Bio89 presenting their phase 1b/2a study. There's something giving on berberine UDCA, which I think is interesting. UDCA being around in hepatology for quite some time now, an add-on salt of that, HTD1801. There's an abstract in statins and cirrhosis. Tropifexor data is kind of presented. So the first true combination study, the tandem study, combination of tropifexor and cenicriviroc. A fatty acid synthase inhibitor, TVBT2640, and of course another FXR agonist, TERN-101. So I think, you know, looking at the therapeutic arena, there's a lot of exciting candidates there.
But is there one of those papers that you think people might get a surprise from, knowing that you might not know the results, or that you think might have something interesting to say?
Well, I think combination therapies have always been one aspect that have been thought about. And if you look at it, there's the two of those talks, you know, one combining the UDCA in a single molecule, as far as I understand, with a berberine, and then the tandem study, of course, it's a classical combination regimen, and we'll have to wait for the presentation, but the concept of combination studies have always been discussed very intensively. I'm looking forward to those results and see what they tell us.
Can somebody educate me a little bit? I looked at the Bio89 paper, and we've talked a little bit in recent weeks about spleen volume, but mostly there in the context of portal hypertension and cirrhosis. And here, it feels to me that it's in fact a NASH study. So help me understand how those three pieces, liver fat volume, PRO-C3 level, spleen volume, might go together in a pre-cirrhotic patient.
You know, the one thing I might want to say, and then I'll head it off to the colleagues, is that the spleen volume is not starting to increase at the cirrhotic stage, but you see an increase over the fibrosis stages. And there's been some good studies by Massimo Pinzani in the past looking at spleen size. This is something we're seeing here. The disease doesn't start at the stage of cirrhosis. It's something that happens before that. You can pick it up with high-end imaging.
Well done, Jorn. You cleared the table. Good job. We're still in Sunday. Any other comments on Sunday?
I just think that it's going to be a very busy day for anybody wanting to be everywhere and all of these stellar talks.
You know, I learned Manal is going to give the NAFLD wrap-up, and I think she'll present all that data to us brilliantly again.
Yeah, in 30 minutes, of course. I don't know how I can summarize this meeting in 30 minutes, but it'll be the make or break of my career, that's for sure.
I want to assure you that when you're done, I will give you a standing ovation. You won't be able to see it because we'll all be virtual.
There is a session on Monday from 3 to 4:30 on experimental advances in NAFLD and NASH. One of the abstracts in there that dovetails very nicely into the Hans Popper lecture is that single-cell RNA sequencing data in mice identified hedgehog signaling in hepatocytes as a critical early event for NAFLD fibrosis, for human NAFLD. So this is a perfect, you know, epitome, and it comes from Anna May Deal's lab, where you can use single-cell RNA sequence to dovetail that with an animal model looking at disease pathogenesis and apply it to our understanding of human NAFLD and NASH progression. So the application of what we're going to be hearing about in the Hans Popper lecture has actually been applied to a primary pathway in fibrosis progression, hedgehog, which is proof of concept here that comes out in the experimental advances session. And there's certainly several other keen abstracts on hepatic macrophage-derived osteopontin and diet-induced NAFLD.
We're going to lose Ken at the bottom of the hour. So, Ken, any last thoughts before you head off?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I have to go back to clinic. They're calling me with some issues there. But really, I think this liver meeting is going to be one of the better ones or best ones, because we're really at a crossroads on the verge of making some breakthroughs in precision medicine, as Manal mentioned, consolidating some screening strategies, and really a crosstalk across field as never before. So this is going to be an unforgettable meeting, and I wish I could stay and talk longer. I mean, there are emerging trends on Monday from the known to the new stuff. It's a very exciting meeting. Thank you, Roger, for having me. Nice to see you, Luis, Manal, and Jorn.
The only big downer about this meeting is we won't have the pleasure of seeing each other in person.
It's true. So, Ken, thank you very much. I hope you'll be joining our coverage at some point during the meeting, so that'll be great. So the only comment and I'm going to make it then back to the humor now where you were. As I was looking at the 6 o'clock Sunday session, not even Monday, I was remembering Jorn's comment about the third session of the postgrad. I'm thinking that Jorn was the guy who raised the idea that that was a good session. I think that only goes till 2 a.m. in Germany, if I remember correctly, or 1:30.
But Jorn's going to be awake for it.
Yes, he will. So Manal, you were going through a couple of other things you thought were really interesting in the event. We can go back to that.
Yeah, no, I think I just wanted to highlight that experimental advances, it has a lot of pertinence to this precision medicine and conceptual application and proof of concept, which really is, I think, where the field is turning, going to have a lot of pertinence to people such as myself who are clinical investigators. So we have to kind of wake up and see what's happening on the basic front so we can glean from it what to do right and what path to take when it comes to the application in clinical trials and for our patients.
So let me turn to our other colleagues and ask what on Monday strikes you most strongly.
At 9 o'clock Eastern Standard, you've got the practice guidelines debrief for patients, which looks like it's a really strong session about advocacy, recommendations, palliative care. Obviously, I touched on palliative care with the ability to look at the progress and how disease goes and the opportunities to put in expert care earlier, even if it is more palliation, better knowledge. That looks like a really strong session between 9 and 10 in the morning. There are a couple of sessions. There's one that Donna Cryer is running on, I think it's Sunday morning, grit and determination. We know her from surfing NASH, but it's very rare that a large set of specialists get to hear from somebody who's 27 years transplanted and all of the problems or solutions that come with that. So her wealth of experience as a person and a patient beyond what she achieves for Global Liver Institute is something that we can learn from. And it would be something that I would encourage a lot of students and medical students to listen to, because this is where we're dealing with behavior going forward. You don't get exposure to that in your training. She is such a wealth of knowledge and experience. That session on the Sunday morning, and I think it's 9 o'clock again, will be a marvelous session for people learning their field and their trade to just listen to, because I don't know many transplant patients 27 years on one organ, but that's a miraculous result for liver medicine to be able to do that with immunosuppressant and will and determination of a patient.
I agree with Louise. I think this is a very important point. You know, looking at Monday, there is one Meet the Expert class that actually details post-transplant care in NASH patients, which I find is interesting because you single out this indication or potentially even the de novo occurrence of NASH in a transplanted liver for a different disease. Of course, so it'll be interesting to learn how they address that. This is an area we haven't even started to think about. How do you deal with either recurrence or transplant de novo NASH, which is in a whole different patient setting and population. So it'll be interesting to hear that.
Did we talk about Parallel 29, which was the NAFL to NASH management outcomes in the clinic session? I don't recall that we did, but I might have been asleep at the switch or paying attention to...
You didn't. It was my next one.
So one of the things I find so interesting about it is that it's clear that we need to do a better job of understanding why it is that one patient's disease has a worse prognostic outcome than another. I mean, Alina was talking last week about the idea that two patients with identical FIB4s, if their KPAs are 1.5 apart, they're a whole different story in terms of how you treat them. So what I'm fascinated about here is, to the degree that we can do a better job of understanding how individual patients will fare by looking at these or some combination of these tests and different kinds of analyses at an individual patient level, I think it has the potential to make care, even in advance of drugs and certainly as drugs come, much more fruitful.
Yeah, and in addition, Roger, and not only at the individual patient level, but this is going to be what providers, you know, outside of expert clinics are going to be using standard assessment fit for. Is this a cholestatic pattern versus a non-cholestatic pattern of injury? These are the tools they have out there. So I think they'll be used to manage patients in the majority of cases.
The only thing I was going to say, I just brought it up to say, as if I got a last comment on Sunday, but you did it. It led you in nicely.
That was kind of you. I mean, given all the suffering my football team having, it was the least you could do. So we'll go to final comments, which is, I want to save Manal for last on this because she actually has the last voice in the meeting. If there's one impression that you expect you might walk away from this meeting with, or an area where you really feel particularly enriched, what would that be?
I'll jump in. And I think it's from the language that's being used throughout the meeting. A lot of it before was always on NASH. We've got more sessions on NAFLD. So for me, it's the fact that it appears to be, we're now looking at earlier in the time frame, we're targeting more NAFLD in the language that we're using. So it'll be interesting to see if that's where it goes for me, because obviously that's earlier intervention, that's looking at the fat content rather than just the NASH side, the earlier we get down the time point. That to me, it's just a general feel I've got from the wording of the sessions overall compared to the recent ASLD last year and obviously the last two EASLs. So that's just the general feel. It's a softening of earlier looking, and that I find quite exciting.
I'd still say there's a lot of therapeutic talks. We're seeing a lot of early development programs being presented. The big phase 3 studies are actively enrolling, but still we're seeing a lot of phase 2 coming after that. And I think there's a lot of room for those compounds, and that's very encouraging because, again, we haven't crossed the finish line yet, and I think there's a lot of need for robust treatments, potentially different treatments in different patients and all the things we're learning now. So this makes me optimistic in terms of drug development.
Here was mine. I was really sorry this became a virtual meeting because there's so much growth and so much stuff in so many different areas that the ability to have coffee tables and meals with friends and colleagues to take the different elements of what we're learning and try to roll them into a single frame. I'm a big fan of integrative thinking, as you know, and I would really have appreciated the opportunity to do that, particularly since in these situations I almost entirely listen because you all know more than I do. I miss that. And instead, no pressure, Manal, it's going to be in the hands of one woman at the end of all this to take all that integrative thinking around NASH and put it together in a single place. So what should we be listening for?
You know, if I can summarize this meeting in a nutshell, yes, there are a handful of phase 2 very important trials that are going to read out at this meeting. You know, the Alpine 2-3 study, the BMS Falcon 1 and 2 trial, the Novartis Atlas trial. We're going to see that. But what interestingly COVID did is kind of slowed down the momentum on a little bit on clinical trials and enrollment and getting patients into these studies, that this meeting shifted a little bit to not being major impact clinical trials outcomes meeting, because many of our phase 3 and many of the phase 2 trials are still ongoing. But what we are seeing is a shift to much more heavier data and science when it comes to genomics and genetics and gut microbiota, biomarkers, precision medicine, which is really a shift we needed. So while these very important trials are ongoing, we are being enriched with a lot of armamentarium so that looking forward, we can have more clarity of vision as to how to interpret maybe these ongoing studies, how to look at surrogate markers, how to understand disease biology better such that we can design our upcoming trials in a stronger manner that leverages many of these platforms and this innovative science that we're going to see at this meeting. So while one element of ASLD may have taken a little bit of a back seat, I don't want to say it was diminished in any way. We're going to probably see it at upcoming meetings. I think what we're seeing here front and center is translational research. And so that's exciting.
I think that should be the last word for the day. And then you get the last word at the meeting also. So you're going to get a lot of last words on this topic.
I know. Well, they left me to do the debrief. I don't think anybody else wanted to take on the challenge. I must have been foolish enough just to say yes. So here I am.
Well, you know, I'm happy to hear that because in situations like that, I always assume it's the person who runs slowest out of the room that gets caught. So the idea that you stepped up and wanted to say yes is in itself a huge step in the right direction.
They must have caught me off guard. But I'm okay. Happy to do it.
So with that, let me thank Ken, who's already left, and Jorn, Manal, Luis, thanks for being with us today. Hoping all of you will be back in some shape or form during our actual coverage of the event. And to everybody else out there, I'll be back with business in a couple of minutes.
Welcome to today's episode 53 business section.
It's now Tuesday. I'm still in Maine, but I lost my sound-friendly studio from yesterday. So I'll keep this as short as I can and apologize in advance if it sounds different in a not-so-good way.
This week's number, 51%.
I'm not going to spend much time on numbers this week, but I do want to report that the number of downloads for the month of October was 4,458, which is a 51% jump from our previous high month of August. Along the way, we got a new number one most downloaded element, smashed the 1,000 downloads in a week ceiling twice, and shattered every previous benchmark metric we used to analyze listenership. Whether you joined us last month or are a longtime listener, stick around. It only gets better from here. One more note. Due to some personal circumstances, I've had to delay the formal launch of the What's in the Vault letter. I will have a What's in the Vault comment at the back end of this business section.
The rest of November has some great programming.
As I mentioned during the main portion of the podcast, we will record episodes right after the AASLD sessions close on Sunday and Monday, and we'll release lightly edited versions of those by the following morning. Some truly exciting new opinion leaders have volunteered to join us already. Check out our usual social media sources for ads beginning at the end of the week. We're still working on whether and how to cover Saturday, but if we come up with a solution that works, look for ads on those as well. The week after AASLD, Jeff Lazarus and a couple of the co-authors will join us to discuss the recent, very important consensus statement, Advancing the Global Public Health Agenda for NAFL, that appeared in Nature Reviews Gastroenterology and Hepatology last week. If you do not have a link for the article, we will post one on the Surfing NASH LinkedIn page and through our other social media middle of this week.
This week's What's in the Vault.
Here's the news. Last week, there were really no fast growers from season one. The fastest was episode 20, which looked at how the digital liver meeting in 2020 would be different from the in-person meetings in previous years. The fastest grower from season two that's more than 6 weeks old is the Paris-NASH Imaging Conversation 46.2 I talk about a lot, which gained 60 new downloads last week to become our number one download since we started with Buzzsprout. Episode 45, in which Wayne Eskridge, Tony Viliotti, and Donna Cryer each discussed what they consider the biggest story of the summer, was the fastest growing episode, and Donna's section of that episode, 45.3, grew as fast as the episode itself. Among recent podcasts, Scott Freeman's episode 51 is picking up steam quickly as more people start to find it and tell their friends. If you are linked into Surfing NASH, Olivia Stricker from Diet Pharma made a very nice comment about that episode, one that echoes my sentiments exactly. And with that, I want to finish by thanking our exceptional team, Mike Wilson, Eric Brown, Steve Ennen, and finally, all our listeners who provide energy and inspiration to do this every week, even as I wind up in strange locations, starting podcasts late and then recording in a not-so-great space the following day. Okay, all that's an earful for you, a mouthful too for me. Let me let you know that Stephen will be back with us next week, and Louise as well. Stay safe, surf on, see you on the podcast next week. Bye-bye now.
Have any questions for the surfers? You can send them to surfingnash.com, and we will answer on the podcast or the website.